This is It Is Written, a.k.a. The Brave Knight Saves the Handsome Prince from a Fate Most Untenable. An American Idol Season 8 Alternate Universe fanfic, written by Abusing Sarcasm and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated R, contains the pairing Adam Lambert-Chris Allen, with warnings for explicit yet flowery, but not equine, sex. Author's notes. I blame this solely on Chocolate Asida, who told me she wanted, and I quote, an AU fic with Chris as a knight in training on his quest for something. Something that'd make him able to marry Katie, maybe? And how he meets Adam, the cursed prince, on his way. Adam's curse is that he becomes a talking unicorn on the day and recovers his human form, but loses his voice at night. In addition, it's important to note that, yes, this is unicorn fic, but it's dead fucking serious unicorn fic. No crack here, folks. Just an epic love story. Hearts. Beta, as always, by my knight in shining armor, Akihoshi. Book 1. It is written that, once upon a time, long ago and far away, there lived two men, one a handsome prince and one a brave knight, who, despite the best efforts of circumstance, were fated to be joined. As it is written, so mote it be. Sir Christopher stomped through the underbrush. He'd long ago given up on being quiet. The Mermaid Queen's treasure was clearly the stuff of myth, and the task that King Peter had pressed upon him was one that the wily old man never intended for him to complete. It was a dreadfully hot day, and the shafts of sunlight that pierced the forest's leafy canopy glinted off his silver armor and threatened to blind him. When he pushed his way between two mulberry bushes and saw a light-dappled pool surrounded by smooth gray-violet stones, he heaved a sigh of relief. The forest was as still as death, and Sir Christopher had no fear of being spied by human eyes. He removed his heavy armor and his boots, cursing himself for his hubristic refusal of a squire. His tunic and leggings were soaked with sweat, and he waded into the pool in his clothing so that he might rinse it. The water was so cool and clear, and Sir Christopher wondered if magic made it so. He stripped off his sodden underclothes and draped them over some of the larger stones so that they could dry in the sun. He paddled about happily, enjoying the refreshing water on his bare skin. After a bit, he reclined against the stony bank, in the water up to his waist, and leaned his head back against a rock. The breeze and the sun dried tendrils of his hair across his forehead and over his ears. He must have fallen asleep and drifted into a dream, because suddenly a large, pale shape was obscuring the light. He scrambled to sit up, caught between sleep and waking, and realized it was a horse. A large, beautiful, glossy white horse. No. A unicorn. He could see the horn now, a shimmering spire of pink-white opal, like the inside of a seashell. The unicorn tossed its mane, and the pure white hairs caught the light like a glittering veil. Sir Christopher moved to cover himself, as the animal seemed to have sentience above the other creatures of nature. Do not. There is so little beauty in this forest. Allow me to look upon you and drink in your visage. Sir Christopher blinked. The unicorn had spoken to him. Its equine mouth hadn't moved, but the words had sounded clearly in the still air. It brought a blush to his cheeks to think that such a glorious creature would want to look at a humble man. How can you say there is no beauty here, when you yourself shame the sun and the stars? Sir Christopher asked, shyly moving his hands. I cannot see myself as I appear now. When I glance in the still surface of a pond, I see only my human form. Sir Christopher gasped and curled his legs to his chest. Human form? Was this a witch? A shapeshifter? Are you of the light or of the dark? He asked, wishing his sword was closer to his side.
I am just a man. Cursed now, but just a man. I have no tools for evil. I am no sorcerer, for if I were, I would have had a recourse against he who sorceled me.
From whence do you hail? And why was such a fate thrust upon you? The unicorn ducked its majestic head.
From the west, my father is King Eber.
Sir Christopher was momentarily struck dumb. A prince? Who would dare do such a thing to a prince? Why has your father not helped you?
He knows not of my whereabouts. My curse is a difficult one to bear. Each day, when the sun slips below the horizon, I resume my human form, yet lose my ability to speak. The next day, when the sun rises into the sky, I take this form, but regain my ability to communicate.
Why not go to your father's castle? Surely someone would believe you.
The man who cursed me is a powerful member of my father's inner circle of advisors. I have no doubt he would dissuade my father from believing my story. In addition, I cannot leave this forest. It is my home now. I've been here for 11 moons, and you are the first traveler who has ventured here.
Sir Christopher leapt to his feet and began pulling on his damp clothes. I will make haste to your father's castle. I will request an audience with him, and I will explain your predicament. I will show him that there is a traitor in his midst. The unicorn tossed its mane, and its magical voice became despondent.
Valiant knight, your good heart is unparalleled. In your righteous indignation, has it not crossed your mind that perhaps this curse I bear is just? That the fault is not with the man who punished me, but with me, who is deserving of the punishment?
Sir Christopher paused in drawing on his boot. What the unicorn said was true. It had not occurred to him that the prince might be guilty of some transgression. Say it not. If you have committed an offense, your accuser ought to have taken you in front of a magistrate. No one deserves a punishment such as this, meted out without trial. If unicorns could smile, this one would have.
Thank you, good sir.
My name is Christopher. You may refer to me in that fashion. Have you a name?
Adam.
Pray tell, Prince Adam, do you feel that your curse is just? Are you a danger to yourself or others? If you are, I will leave this place and let you be alone with your conscience. If not, I will hie myself to the court of King Eber at once and plead for justice on your behalf. Prince Adam moved on delicate hooves to the grassy area and lay down, tucking his silvery legs under his body. When he spoke, he sounded tired.
I know not if I am a danger to others. The man who visited this curse on my head did so after coming upon me with his son. There were intimacies of the sort a man would have with his wife.
Sir Christopher was taken aback. He had heard of such things in whispers, sly innuendos, and blatant insults, but he'd never heard a man admit to loving another man in that way. Before he could speak, Prince Adam said,
"Please, Sir Christopher, before you decide to take up my cause or not, will you stay with me a while? I've been so very lonely. Tell me of yourself, of what brings you to this forest. Please?"
Glad for an excuse to gather his thoughts, Sir Christopher moved closer to the unicorn and sat down on the grass. For all that Prince Adam looked like a horse, it still made his cheeks hot to remember that the unicorn had watched him bathe. In light of his recent revelations, Sir Christopher wondered whether Prince Adam saw with the eyes of a horse or of a man. Realizing he'd been silent for several moments, he said, "I am on a quest. I told my king, King Peter the Magnificent, that..." Sir Christopher looked at the grass, embarrassed anew at his presumption. "That I wanted to marry his daughter, the fair Princess Catherine." He peeked up at Adam through his eyelashes, but the startlingly blue eyes looked soft with understanding. Sir Christopher supposed that Prince Adam must have some idea of what it was like to desire someone that you could not have. "King Peter told me that if I could find the Enchanted Forest and bring back the Mermaid Queen's treasure, I might have the hand of Princess Catherine. I'm beginning to think that he has sent me on a wild goose chase to mock my desires."
"Well, my bold knight, it is fortunate that you have found the Enchanted Forest, and I know the location of the Mermaid Queen's treasure."
Sir Christopher looked up, shocked. "Well, that is splendid! I will go at once to the court of King Eber and inform him of what has become of you. Then, when I return, having proven my word is good, might you show me the location of the treasure?"
"I will show you whether you go to my father's court or not. I would not stand in the way of true love. You love your Princess Catherine enough to travel to the ends of the earth on a quest you feared might be futile. That proves that your love is true, and I will help you for no other reason. It is easier for me to go to the grotto in my human form. Wait with me until the night falls, and I will take you there. In morning's light, I will let you ride atop my back to the edge of the forest. If you go to the west, to my father, it will be a noble but unnecessary act. If you go to the east, back to your lady, I will understand, for it is true love."
Moved, Sir Christopher reached out his hand and stroked the sun-warmed flank of the large white beast. "I will go to your father. I can tell from your statements that your heart is pure, and your own ability to love is true and not wrong. I will not allow you to languish here alone when your guilt is only against the rules of man. Your heart is in accordance with the laws of the gods." The unicorn bobbed its head once, as if in acknowledgement.
"You should sleep if you can, Sir Christopher. It is a long walk to the grotto, and if we are to make it once the sun sets, you will have little time for rest this night."
Sir Christopher smiled his thanks and leaned back against the soft body of the unicorn. He pressed his cheek to the gleaming white coat and let his eyes drift closed. When Sir Christopher awoke, the stars were just beginning to show in the sky. He rolled to the side and realized he was no longer pressed against warm hide, but against bare skin. He blinked rapidly, trying to understand what he was seeing. He had been laboring under the impression that all unicorns must be equally beautiful. But he now thought that perhaps Prince Adam's appearance had influenced his four-legged form. His hair was the deepest black, and swept across his forehead like the wings of a raven. His face was defined by strong cheekbones, a straight nose, and full, soft lips. His body, from what Sir Christopher could tell from his position half atop it, was well-honed and lean. Then, belatedly, he realized that he was still lying on Prince Adam, and he sat up guiltily, refusing to turn his head until he assessed the prince's state of dress. When Sir Christopher moved, Prince Adam's eyes fluttered open, revealing the same crystalline blue that they'd been in his unicorn form. He smiled, showing even white teeth, but he didn't speak. Sir Christopher remembered then that Prince Adam was mute in his human form. "You can't speak, I remember. I am ready to follow you to the treasure." Prince Adam nodded and smiled again. He held up one finger to indicate that Sir Christopher should wait a moment, and stood, moving toward the trees. Sir Christopher chanced to look at Prince Adam's retreating form, and gulped. He'd never been in the habit of looking at men's naked backsides with interest before. He wondered if Prince Adam's confession that he'd lain with a man had awakened a curiosity. He shook his head to clear it, and stepped into the bushes to answer nature's call. He was waiting by the shore of the little pool when Prince Adam emerged. Sir Christopher assumed that he'd been abandoned with the clothes on his back, because what he was wearing now were clearly the vestiges of a once fine ensemble, now rags. He was covered with what amounted to a loincloth, but it was made of black fabric adorned with silver brocade, and what had once been a fine shirt, now missing half the buttons and hanging open to mid-chest. Prince Adam gestured to the clothing, and gave a shrug as if to say, "What choice do I have here in the forest?" Sir Christopher swallowed hard and said, "Lead the way, Prince Adam. I will follow. And my condolences on your brocade jacket. It must have once been quite fine." Prince Adam smirked at him and moved toward a gap in the trees, his well-worn boots moving quietly. He was a man trained in hunting. Sir Christopher left his armor behind, covered in fronds, despite Prince Adam's assertion that he was the first man to venture into the clearing in nigh a year. However, he carried his sword. He wished he'd thought to inquire whether or not they might meet danger, but something about Prince Adam in his human form, perhaps his muteness or his startling appearance, stayed Sir Christopher's tongue. They walked in silence, the dark of the forest pressing in on them like a third member of their party. It would have been eerie but for the calm that Prince Adam exuded. Sir Christopher wondered how often he'd roamed this forest alone, unable to break the silence with his own voice. Presently, Sir Christopher began to hear the sound of rushing water, and he pressed closer to Prince Adam's back. They stepped out of the trees and into a clearing dominated by a rushing waterfall. The moonlight shone brightly, illuminating the area with a blue half-light. Prince Adam grabbed Sir Christopher's arm and pointed beyond the water. It seemed to obscure a grotto. "The treasure is there?" Sir Christopher asked excitedly. Prince Adam nodded and walked to the edge of the pool at the base of the falls. He shrugged the linen shirt from his broad shoulders and reached to untie the knot holding his makeshift loincloth in place. Sir Christopher gave a sort of strangled cough. Prince Adam gestured again to the grotto and made a swimming motion. Then he removed the loincloth and draped both articles over a low-hanging tree limb. Sir Christopher tried with all his heart to look away from the prince's body, from his most intimate areas, but he could not. He attempted to create an image in his mind of the Princess Catherine, but to his shock, he could not recall her features. Prince Adam held out his hand to Sir Christopher, imploring him. His heart pounding in his breast like the hooves of a panicked animal, Sir Christopher leaned his sword against the tree and stripped his clothing. His body was just beginning to react to the other man's nudity, and he hurried to the pond, hoping the cool water would alleviate his discomfort. He saw Prince Adam's open assessment of his body and the approval in his eyes, and Sir Christopher looked away, embarrassed. They waded into the water, which reached Sir Christopher's chest. Prince Adam, several inches taller, kept looking back as if he expected Sir Christopher to be taken by a tide. "I may be shorter than you, but I'm quite competent at wading," he snapped, a bit irritated. Prince Adam turned and cupped Sir Christopher's cheek with one damp hand. He mouthed the words, "I'm sorry," before letting his hand drop and turning back toward the water. Sir Christopher felt profoundly shaken by the touch and struggled to keep his footing on the slippery rock bottom of the pool. All he could see before him was Prince Adam's broad back, the skin unnaturally pale as if untouched by sunlight. With a jolt, Sir Christopher realized that it was untouched by sunlight. It was impossible to reconcile the dark-haired man who walked before him, so flawless and so confident, with the ivory beast he'd been that very afternoon. They reached the falls, and the spray pelted Sir Christopher's face. Prince Adam turned to him and made a motion indicating that they should walk through. He cupped Sir Christopher's cheek again and leaned close. "Don't be scared," he mouthed. Their lips were a hair's breadth apart, and surprising even himself, Sir Christopher pressed closer, letting their mouths touch. It wasn't quite a kiss, as they pulled away too soon, but it was something. And in the seconds afterward, Sir Christopher wondered of what exactly Prince Adam had been telling him not to be afraid. Then, entwining their fingers, Prince Adam led Sir Christopher through the rushing water. For a moment, everything stopped. He could neither see, nor hear, nor draw breath. Then he emerged on the other side, sputtering and gasping. They shook themselves like dogs, and Sir Christopher saw that they were in a beautiful little cave, the walls of which were studded with seashells and pebbles in an intricate mural. Prince Adam walked to a dais in the center and grasped a large clamshell. He carried it over to Sir Christopher, who had to control his eyes to keep from looking where they should not stray. The shell was full near to overflowing with jewels and ornaments of gold and silver. Sir Christopher had never seen such riches in one place, and he reached his hand out reverently, stopping just short of touching. "I cannot take this. My quest it may be, but it is not mine to take. I thought that, were the reward great enough, I could steal if I had to. But now I realize that either my honor is too strong, or my desire to win Princess Catherine's hand is not true." As he spoke the words, Sir Christopher realized it was the latter. And as he chanced a glimpse of Prince Adam's tall, strong form, he knew the reason for his waning interest in the fair princess, and it unnerved him. He turned and strode toward the waterfall, wading into the cool water that lapped at his ankles. However, he could not bring himself to walk through the watery curtain and separate himself from Prince Adam. He heaved a fortifying breath and turned back towards the grotto. Prince Adam had placed the shell back on the dais and was now looking at Sir Christopher, assessing the emotions that were no doubt visible on his face. Sir Christopher spoke slowly, testing each word on his tongue as he attempted to explain. "I've been searching for a long time. For what? I did not know. Respect, perhaps? Or simply for someone to see me? I have been oft overlooked in my life, and I think that I may have wished to win the princess's hand for the wrong reasons. I just wanted..." He trailed off as Prince Adam walked to him and grasped his shoulders. "I see you," Prince Adam mouthed. "I see you." Sir Christopher didn't think. He just reacted, smashing his mouth against Prince Adam's like a man possessed by demons. He'd kissed a few women before, but their kisses had never stirred passion in him. He assumed it had been a lack of love that had rendered their kisses hollow, but now he wondered. Perhaps it was the lack of a broad, masculine chest and strong, powerful arms enveloping him, and the lack of the rasp of a stubbled jaw against his own. Or, oddly enough, perhaps it was that he felt closest to the elusive feeling of love at this moment. All he knew of love was from courtly songs sung by troubadours, but what he felt now was much as they described. Falling, floating, his stomach churning, his head empty of all thoughts but more and please. Those words dripped from his lips as well, unbidden but necessary. More, please. Their bodies were pressed together from foreheads to toes, and Sir Christopher could feel Prince Adam's arousal against his own. He hadn't known this man for even a full day, and had only seen his true appearance mere hours before, but somehow, some way, he felt as though he belonged with the prince. Prince Adam appeared to retain some magic about him, for his lips seemed to be everywhere at once, teasing Sir Christopher behind his ears, down the column of his neck, and across his shoulders and collarbone. He nipped at the soft flesh of Sir Christopher's neck, smiling apologetically at the hiss he coaxed forth. Then Prince Adam sunk to his knees in the water, and Sir Christopher gasped as he realized the intent behind the action. He had no time to protest before Prince Adam slid his mouth over Sir Christopher's length, engulfing him in warm wetness wholly different from the water all around him. The waterfall splashed endlessly like rain, and the air was heavy with the droplets that seemed to hang, suspended, rather than rushing to the ground. Sir Christopher's limbs felt leaden, and he was powerless to move, held in place by the cool wetness of the sodden air and the maddening rhythm of Prince Adam's mouth. He ran his hand through the soaking raven hair, watched as water ran down Prince Adam's face, over his cheeks as they hollowed and released, in rivulets much like tears. Sir Christopher swiped at one sharp cheekbone with the pad of his thumb, gasping in surprise as Prince Adam raised brilliant blue eyes, brighter than the jewels of the Mermaid Queen's treasure, to look boldly into Sir Christopher's face. Sir Christopher pushed him back, gently, hissing as the warmth of Prince Adam's mouth gave way to the cool air. Prince Adam looked stricken, and Sir Christopher rushed to say, "No, no, I just want..." He had no words to articulate his desires, so he joined Prince Adam, kneeling on the sandy bottom of the pool as the water swirled around them, churning and bubbling with the force of the falling waterfall. Their lips met again, and Sir Christopher whimpered against Prince Adam's mouth, desperate for something he couldn't name. Prince Adam seemed to know, though, as he pushed Sir Christopher back in the water until his head rested on the sandy bank, his lower body in the water. Sir Christopher wanted to say something or do something, but he was helpless to do anything but make small, needy noises as Prince Adam wound one of his powerful arms under Sir Christopher's leg, lifting him bodily and dragging the flat of his tongue across Sir Christopher's body in his most intimate place. He tried to protest, his face burning with shame, not at the act, but at his body's response to it. But then Prince Adam pressed a finger against the small opening, pressing forward, even as his tongue moved everywhere at once, making Sir Christopher slick and slippery. Sir Christopher writhed as Prince Adam pressed another finger inside. He knew what Prince Adam intended to do. He'd heard such acts spoken of in low tones and in brash insults, but he'd never imagined he would partake, let alone that it would make him feel as though he were falling apart and being put back together again, piece by piece, into something different, something better. When Prince Adam laid his body back in the water, Sir Christopher gripped both of Prince Adam's arms tightly. "Please, more, please." Prince Adam seemed to have been soliciting permission as he slid forward and began to press forth, entering Sir Christopher's body with exquisite gentleness. There was pain he had not anticipated, and he cried out. However, Prince Adam's mouth was there to swallow the cries. "Please," Sir Christopher whispered into Prince Adam's mouth, not knowing for what he was pleading. Again, Prince Adam seemed to know, bringing his hand up to touch the engorged flesh that rose out of the water, caressing, stroking until Sir Christopher's muscles went taut and he held his breath against the onslaught. It was like walking through the waterfall again, and for a moment he could neither see nor hear, and his chest burned with the need to gulp the damp, heavy air. Prince Adam was moving faster now, and as Sir Christopher gasped for breath, Prince Adam stiffened above him, fingers curling like talons into Sir Christopher's skin as he threw his head back and screamed silently, the rushing of the waterfall taking the place of voice. They dragged themselves from the pool and collapsed on the sand, heaving and panting, grasping at each other's bodies, unable to stop touching for even one moment. Sir Christopher was barely aware of Prince Adam's mouth moving against his temple. In a kiss, a futile attempt at speech, before sleep claimed him and he drifted away. Book 2. Prince Adam awoke with the heaviness that came from being the beast. He could not yawn or stretch or any of the other satisfactions of morning. He could only rise to his feet, lifting his muscular body on its four legs, and shake his mane. His sight was strange as the beast, but he didn't need a human's eyes to realize he was in the glade by the grotto. The rushing of the waterfall surrounded him. He dimly remembered struggling from the sand and passing under the waterfall, wading back to the grassy bank, and curling up on the soft grass with Sir Christopher. Belatedly, Prince Adam realized he was alone. Sir Christopher was nowhere in sight. Prince Adam tried not to worry. Perhaps he'd gone into the woods for a moment, or back into the water to swim. Prince Adam cast his equine head from side to side, searching for signs of movement in the trees or the water. He saw nothing. He cried out, but his unspoken voice went unanswered. It occurred to Prince Adam that Sir Christopher might have gone back to the forest pool to retrieve his armor. He was unsure why Sir Christopher would not wait for him to awake, though. Still, he could think of no other explanation for Sir Christopher's absence, so he pushed into the wood, threading his way through the trees. It was more difficult to travel the forest in the form of the beast, and branches scratched at his flanks, and his hooves slipped on gnarled roots. Cursing softly, he pressed onward, periodically calling out to Sir Christopher, in case he was here in the woods, lost and in need of guidance. When he reached the grassy glen where he'd first met Sir Christopher, he went to the bush where the armor had been secreted. It was gone. Prince Adam knew that no one else traversed the enchanted forest. If the armor had been removed, Sir Christopher had taken it. Taken it and left this place, probably forever. Curling his legs underneath himself, Prince Adam collapsed on the grass, wishing for his human form so that he might weep. Suspicion had been growing in his breast since he'd awakened to find himself alone, but he had not allowed the dark thoughts to overtake him. Now, however, faced with the truth, he berated himself for his foolishness. Why would a man such as Sir Christopher wish to stay here with the likes of him? During the day, they could not so much as hold hands, and Prince Adam could never even speak with his true voice. What could he expect Sir Christopher to do? Live here in the forest like an outlaw, dressed in rags? And Prince Adam was able to survive because as the beast, he ate the sweet meadow grass. However, he rarely found anything suitable to eat in his human form, save for some berries occasionally, if he was lucky. He berated himself for his stupidity. Sir Christopher must have awakened and realized all these things, and probably more, and had hied himself off to his liege's castle. Prince Adam wondered if Sir Christopher had taken the treasure after all, intending to marry his princess. The thought cut deep, and Prince Adam vowed to never return to the grotto. He could not bear the thought of seeing the empty pedestal and knowing that Sir Christopher had chosen another. With an empty heart, Prince Adam bowed his equine head until the pearly spire touched the grass. He must have drifted into a doze, and an indeterminate amount of time later, he was startled to his feet by a hand on his flank. Tossing his head, he looked around, hoping against hope that Sir Christopher had returned. But instead, he met the gaze of a liveried servant from his father's castle. Even with his inhuman vision, he could recognize his father's colors.
"Can you speak?"
the servant asked, looking slightly uneasy.
"I can,"
Prince Adam said, afraid to say more, afraid of what the man's presence in the forest, and seemingly aware of Prince Adam's identity even, could possibly mean. "Please come with me to the edge of the forest. Your father wishes to see you."
"How does he... Did he tell you?"
Prince Adam trailed off, unable to wend his way through his emotions to ask for the answers he desired. Instead, he gestured for the servant to lead the way, and followed docilely behind. He picked his way through the trees and underbrush, wondering what could have happened. Suddenly, he was struck with a thought that caused him to stumble on a tree root. Perhaps Sir Christopher had indeed followed through with his promise to alert the king to the treachery that had befallen Prince Adam. His final kindness had been to stop at the castle and send someone to rescue Prince Adam from his fate. Or, he barely dared think it, but perhaps Sir Christopher was waiting for him at the edge of the wood. As he walked, he began to allow himself to daydream of walking through the trees and seeing Sir Christopher's smiling visage. It was such a beautiful thought that it kept his mind occupied until he reached the forest edge. His father looked just as he had remembered, but his face shone with a look of hope and amazement.
"My son, can it be?"
"It is I, father,"
Prince Adam said, wishing he might step into his father's arms like a lad. Instead, the king came forward, stroking Prince Adam's silvery mane. It was then that Prince Adam saw that Sir Christopher was nowhere to be seen. His heart sank, but he was distracted by his father's next words.
"Please, perform the enchantment,"
his father said, his voice thick with emotion. A man stepped forward, and Prince Adam recognized him as the sorcerer who had cursed him nearly a year before. He flinched involuntarily, and his father stroked his neck.
"Do not be afraid, my son. He will perform the counter-curse under penalty of death."
Prince Adam noticed then several knights on horseback a few paces away. They were armed with bows and long swords, and Prince Adam calmed himself.
"I have agreed to banish the sorcerer from my kingdom, sparing him from death, as long as he first restores my son to me."
"I shall," the sorcerer said in his deep voice. "You must step away from the prince, your highness."
His father stepped back, and the sorcerer began the enchantment. In only a few moments, Prince Adam felt the transformation beginning.
When he was in his human form, his father draped a robe around his shoulders and pulled him tightly against his chest. "My son!" "Father," Prince Adam said, his heart beating with trepidation. "May I speak to you for a moment, alone?" "Of course, my son." His father had brought him a fine set of clothes, and they stepped away from the others, into the cover of the trees, while Prince Adam dressed. "We will keep the sorcerer in the dungeon until we are sure he has healed you completely." Prince Adam nodded. "Father, pray tell, are you aware of the sorcerer's reasons for placing the curse upon my head?" His father nodded. "I am. In another time, I might have been angered, but now that I have felt the pain of losing you, I would rather that you lie with men and remain in the castle by my side than leave again." Prince Adam smiled, but his joy was tempered by the knowledge that the man he wished to have by his side had left without a trace. He embraced his father again, but he didn't know the words to speak to adequately express his feelings. His father seemed to understand, though, and merely laid a hand along his cheek. "Let's go home, son." They stepped to the edge of the wood, and Prince Adam held his breath as he took a step into the meadow. Then another. And another. It seemed the curse had been lifted after all. His father mounted, but there was no horse waiting for Prince Adam. He was about to speak when one of the knights reached out a hand to him. Prince Adam looked up, and through the slit in the knight's visor, he could see a familiar pair of eyes. With a whoop, he grabbed the proffered hand, put a foot in the stirrup, and swung himself onto the back of the charger, wrapping his arms around the armored waist. "I thought you'd left." "Left? Only to do what I said I would do. Only to rescue you." "Rescue me? I'm no damsel in distress, you peacock." Sir Christopher laughed. "Of course not. But where is it written that the brave knight must rescue the fair maiden, thus winning her hand? Might he not instead win the hand of the handsome prince?" "He may," Prince Adam said, tightening his hold. He considered for a moment before amending. "And it shall now be written that he has." And it was. The end.